This is Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, with Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist. Welcome to the Health and Happiness Show. We thank you, the Montana Psychological Association, for their support via the Public Education Committee. We also thank Bob Wall for his tireless efforts as KGVM station engineer. We try to bring you timely information about mental and emotional health needs and how we as a group and individuals can be supportive. Now, Dr. Suzanne Wood will introduce today's topic.
We're going to start today with a story. The history is that in 1992, an 18-year-old young woman in Italy was raped by her driving instructor. She pressed charges and won her case, but the instructor appealed, and so the case went to the Italian High Court. In 1999, the court overturned the conviction, with a member of the High Court declaring that since the victim wore very tight jeans, the instructor could not have removed them himself. Therefore, the victim must have willingly participated. Women of the Italian legislature protested the decision by wearing jeans. As news of the decision spread, so did the protest, so that today, in many places around the world, organizations coordinate community-wide denim days to show the support of survivors and to raise awareness about the crimes of sexual assault. And so we have many other ways that we approach this topic, and right now is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and here in Bozeman, we're so fortunate to have with us Sage, who's the program manager for the Child Advocacy Center, and Perrin could not be with us today, but we have Mandy. And what's your title, Mandy?
Development and Communications Coordinator.
Very good. And we might need to just move in a little bit closer here. And so as we're talking, we want to talk about why April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month and how we go about doing things here in Bozeman. We're not in Italy, but we sure have that same concern. And so how do we approach these things? Sage, welcome.
Thank you. Yes, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month and also Child Abuse Prevention Month. And so we at the Sexual Assault Counseling Center and Gallatin County Child Advocacy Center coordinate with the fabulous Mandy to get a lot of information and education about this topic out, usually on our social media, and then are also doing several tabling events and just really trying to be out in the community to raise awareness, answer questions, and make ourselves available. And we are available 24 hours a day, every single day of the year, if anyone has questions or needs support for anything related to sexual assault or sexual violence.
Okay, we're sitting here in your beautiful new facility, and I think it just has something for everyone, but particularly for children. So tell me, when you say you're here 24 hours a day, what that might involve, what happens when a child has been sexually assaulted, and how might that, just give me a scenario of how that might work out. Mandy, could you join us and let us know the overview, say, of how this works?
For the building?
Yes, and yeah. For the center here.
Yeah, so I can talk about our new space, and then I'll hand it off to Sage to talk about the logistics of what happens when a report comes in. So yes, we do have a beautiful new space. We have two buildings on our new property that are renovated and ready to go. So it houses our 24-hour crisis call center. We have counseling rooms, crisis walk-in spaces, administrative spaces, meeting and training spaces. That was part of phase one of our renovations. And then we're actually in phase two of renovating another portion of a building to house our new Gallatin County Child Advocacy Center. So it'll be a brand new space, which will be great to serve children and families who are going through something really traumatic. And so if we can create a really great space and welcoming and safe space for them, we're very excited for that. Our space now has been working for us, but it definitely needs some improvement. So we're excited for this new area to be able to serve families in.
Yeah. Our current space, we are working out of a renovated condo, which is fabulous for creating that like homey and safe environment for kiddos, but definitely is challenging logistically at times to have the entire team there. So when an allegation of child abuse comes in, it usually comes into law enforcement or child protective services first. And then we in Bozeman and Gallatin County have a really fabulous team. And so we work with law enforcement, child protective services, community-based advocates, mental health, as well as system-based advocates, and so many other folks to kind of coordinate a response for kids. And research shows that that really reduces trauma. If we can all come in at one time and just get everyone's questions answered for their pieces and also hold those families and have extra supports for them right from the beginning, it reduces that trauma for kids and families. So our current space looks like a lot of people piling into a teeny tiny observation room to watch the interviews, and that will be so nice to get that shifted to a larger space where we can really support the team and support the families.
And accommodate the very special needs at a time like this.
Yeah.
Because people coming in are going to be most likely dreadfully upset. And so you have, let me understand this, you have counselors on hand.
Yeah.
You have medical folks that are part of the equation. You have a place for them to go.
Yes, and so when a family comes in for, say, a forensic interview, which is most often how we first get in touch with families, they will be met by one of our counselor advocates. And their job is really just to make sure that kid and that family feels comfortable in our space. We do things like get them snacks. Sometimes we'll have a fabulous support dog there who can kind of walk them through the space and just be there to really sit with this kiddo and kind of calm their nervous system down in a time where they're feeling really overwhelmed. But then we'll also do things like a trauma assessment to see what is your kiddo going through and what specific symptoms are they having after they experience this traumatic event. And so that really allows us to tailor our services to what that kid and that family needs in that moment. And we do continued follow-up. So whether that investigation moves forward with law enforcement or not, our counselor advocates are available day and night.
Yeah, CACs are there. It's a national model evidence-based trauma-informed model, and we're accredited, which is a big kudos to the whole multidisciplinary team to get accreditation. That's not an easy feat. So that means we're upholding the best practices and making sure we're doing everything that we can to serve the family. So it's a really cool thing. It started in 2015?
Yes. We were accredited first in 2016, and then just recently were reaccredited for the second time. Mm-hmm. So went through a process of having everyone come in from national, look over our protocols, talk to all of our team members, and give us that accreditation again.
Mm-hmm. You deal with adults as well.
We do. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, sure, I can talk. So our sexual assault counseling center started in 1996, so it's been around for a really long time. And it's sort of the sister program of the Child Advocacy Center, so it serves adult survivors of sexual assault in a lot of the same ways. You know, doing legal advocacy, medical advocacy, our counselor advocates are on call 24/7. They can go to the ER and help a survivor go through that process.
basically through all their advocacy needs, and then we do long and short-term counseling as well. That program's been around a little bit longer, and it really helped start the CAC and really was the basis of the CAC really starting here.
Yeah, just noticing that need and the gap in services for child survivors of sexual abuse really facilitated that that push to start the child-specific multidisciplinary team and get the Child Advocacy Center accredited. Our sexual assault counseling center serves both historic and present survivors of sexual assault and sexual abuse. And so whether someone experienced something 20 years ago or 20 minutes ago, we're there to respond.
Yeah, that's one question we were going to get to, are the long-term impacts happen here. So what I'm hearing is that my favorite thing to do in my work is to be research-based, to know that what I'm doing is truly the most helpful. And it sounds like the Help Center is very much research-based, looking for those things that have been found to be absolutely the most positive and the most helpful. We really applaud you for that. That makes a big difference. You're not just whistling in the dark here. You're actually applying all the best possible mannerisms, words, professionals to help when this comes up.
Yeah, our counselor advocates are real experts in trauma. And so when someone walks in our door or calls us, they're going to get the best of the best, which is amazing.
We're going to do this again later, but for anybody out there who might have any concerns either with sexual trauma or child sexual trauma, could you give us your phone number or tell them how to reach someone or what to do in the case something comes up?
Yeah, so we are really lucky that our 24-hour call center answers several different lines. Mm-hmm. And so the first is going to be our local line, has been around since Help Center has been around, and that's going to be 406-586-3333. We also answer the 211, and that is a resource line. And then finally, we answered 988. And so all of those numbers will get you connected to someone who will be able to listen to what's going on for you and then get connected to appropriate resources. So whether that's getting you connected to one of our counselor advocates or helping you decide that maybe you do need to call the national number, the 800 number to report child abuse, they can kind of help walk you through all those different processes and get you where you need to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Give you a good start at any rate, and then you take it from there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I know at one time there was a role for volunteers at the Help Center and with the Child Advocacy Group. How would a volunteer interact with the situation? And is there a need, or do you just need specialized people in this area?
Yeah, we always love having volunteers. Our biggest volunteer program is with the hotline. And so their role in interacting with survivors of sexual violence would usually be in answering that hotline call, doing some of that crisis management right off the bat and kind of talking with them, assessing their needs, and then getting them connected with that specialized counselor advocate who can do more of the trauma-focused work and more of the long-term work if it's needed.
So if a person out there listening wanted to volunteer, what sort of training might they receive to equip them for this effort?
Yeah, so our volunteers go through about 60 hours of training, and so everything from active listening, how to manage someone or listen to someone in a suicidal crisis, to referring to resources. So they get a really strong sort of foundation in the training, and then we do a lot of on-shift training. So having a volunteer answer the phone and having someone coach them through a call or debrief after the call. So there's lots of training and staff supervision and development too. And so if someone is interested, they can always hop on our website, which is bozemanhelpcenter.org.
Yeah. And so that training could be very valuable to help you perhaps be the one to save a life or save a child,
mm-hmm.
or save a child's future. So I want everybody out there in the audience to listen to that phone number again.
Yes, it's going to be 406-586-3333.
And you can call that number and volunteer. Even if you can't volunteer, even maybe more than just over the weekend. How about that? Mm-hmm. Or we have 24 hours a day that we could use help here, right? Mm-hmm. Right.
And people reach out to us who are worried about someone or someone in their life has experienced sexual violence. So just keep in mind that we're here for them as well. Sometimes getting someone help takes someone in their life who cares to get them the help that they need. So that number's there for literally everyone, whether they're firsthand experiencing it or someone in their life is.
Well, I have some facts and figures here, but maybe you all could tell us, when we talk about how prevalent this is, how many folks might run into this sort of problem?
National statistics are showing about 1 in 4 women will experience sexual violence in their lifetime, and approximately 1 in 6 men. And that those figures rate are just the people who we know of or who have self-reported in surveys, and so that could be higher. Certainly that number for male survivors is probably somewhat higher. There is less reporting from male survivors as well.
Okay, I just heard 1 out of 4.
Yes.
And 1 out of 6, which is also very concerning. So it's really something we all need to check into, be aware of. And we're talking about children here. So I'm just wondering, I understand there are sexual predators for children. And how do we become aware of them? Perhaps you move to a new neighborhood and you don't know the folks there. And maybe preface this thought with, who is usually that predator for the child? Is it some monster out that comes in from the scrub brush? Tell me who does most of that 1 out of 4 sexual trauma.
Yeah, for both kids and adults, it is really clear that it is not that stranger hiding in the bushes, right? It is someone that is known to this family, to this child, to this person, whether that is a friend, a boyfriend or girlfriend, right? It is someone who has that level of trust of the family, of the person who is committing these acts of violence. And so I think we do a really good job of, right, preparing our kids for, you don't talk with strangers, you don't go in someone else's house, right? And so it's, how do we also equip kids and also adults to know, when is someone crossing your boundary, right? Because that's where it begins, is people testing these boundaries and seeing how much I can push this. And so we let kids know, hey, if you're ever feeling uncomfortable, who are your safe adults you can tell? And making a list, because that's not always mom and dad, right? As much as we would want it to be, that's not always the people kids want to go to. And so proactively making the list with your kid of, like, who are the other safe adults in your life? If you don't feel like you can tell mom, who else can you go and tell if you're uncomfortable or if something has happened, right? And just having those conversations with them about who are the safe people you can go to.
And we've found over the years, our list particularly has mentioned, that sometimes a child or an adult doesn't feel safe to disclose what happened. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a teacher that everyone loves, or a neighbor, Uncle Bill. So how do we almost feel like we're turning against...
A youth minister, a Boy Scout leader, any number of... You know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Boy Scouts and youth ministers.
Priests.
High risk, yeah. So, there used to be available a list of predators within the community. Do we still have that?
We do. You can check the Montana Sexual and Violent Offenders Registry, which I don't have the web address right off the top of my head, but happy to
get
that to you.
It's the Montana Registry for Sexual Offenders. And why would we check that? Maybe we've moved to a new neighborhood and we don't know anyone there. Sometimes it's that friendliest person who comes over that might put your child at risk. I hate to be paranoid here, but as a parent, it's really hard to know. How would you advise us on that, Sage?
Yeah, being able to check that registry, right, and just be aware, it adds that level of knowledge that you might not have had if you didn't check into that, right? And so that when you are talking with neighbors or having your kids ride bikes or going door-to-door and selling popcorn or whatever they are doing for school or extracurriculars, that you just have an idea of who is around you, right? And that awareness can be helpful, and it can also help put you at ease of, okay, I know. I kind of have an idea of what's going on in my neighborhood.
What are some warning signs that kiddos might exhibit when they haven't disclosed yet but are showing some signs?
Yeah, sometimes we'll see changes in behavior, like really not wanting to spend time with someone, or on the other end of that, really wanting to spend time with someone because, like we have established, right, this is someone usually known to the child, and there is a lot that goes into that of, I'm going to give you gifts, and maybe I'm paying you special attention, doing things like that. And so even if a kiddo is really wanting to spend time with that person and seems like they want to be with that person a lot, and then maybe later, a couple years down the line, discloses that something happened, that isn't a reason to not believe that kiddo, right?
How often should you believe a child?
Always. Kids, okay. Yes, we know from statistics that children do not make up sexual abuse. And so if a kid is talking with you about sexual abuse, we want to believe it.
And that 90% is the national figure I read, probability that that abuser is a family member, a neighbor, a coach, someone close to you. Unfortunately, predators go into fields like coaching baseball, softball, maybe swimming, whatever, because they have ready access. So, Sage, what would you say to your daughter about if somebody's approaching her? Tell us that little talk that mothers might need to have. Uncomfortable though it may be.
Yeah, we talk a lot, starting, my kiddos are 5 and under right now, and so even now we're talking about things like using appropriate terms for your body parts. And research is showing that that really helps, because if you are using slang terms and a kiddo is disclosing that someone has touched them inappropriately, right, someone might not know if they're not using appropriate anatomical terms for their body. Other things are, you know, again, my kiddos are really little, so starting with, like, private part rules. No one should be showing you their private parts. You shouldn't be showing anyone your private parts. If it's covered by a bathing suit, that's something that someone doesn't get to see unless it's an adult helping you clean up after going to the bathroom, or maybe a doctor with your permission, right? And so really giving kids this autonomy of their bodies, and starting little with asking them, can I help you with this? Can I help you with this? Which we know as adults we have to do, but interjecting that piece of you get to have some choice and some decision in this, so that as they get older, they have that inner voice that tells them, no, I get to be in charge of what happens to my body.
One thing, do you all rely on drawings that children might do when they're that kind of vocabulary they have before they have complicated speech?
Yeah, our forensic interviewers get 36 hours of training in interviewing kids, and that ranges from kiddos as young as 3 to kids 17, 18. Sometimes we interview people who are technically adults but maybe feel more comfortable in that child or family friendly setting, based on a variety of their personal needs, and so they get extensive training on what kind of questions can kids answer at certain points during their developmental trajectory. When is it appropriate to ask a kid maybe like, hey, can you draw what happened for me? And so they really go based on the child and what they're presenting and where they're at developmentally.
I remember an experience. I was a speech therapist working in the schools many years ago, and one of the teachers noticed that one of the little girls in class was just not herself at all. And she kind of took the bull by the horns, took the little girl in the restroom, and found great evidence of sexual trauma. And the little girl, you know, was able to talk with her. So that teacher did something the family evidently did not want to do or could not do. She got that child to safety. So if you're a neighbor seeing children or a teacher, or talk to me about how when you see the signs, you might feel reluctant to say anything, but how do we approach that to make sure we're taking care of that child?
Yeah, it can feel really hard as an adult to be seeing something and maybe not wanting to say, because what if I'm wrong, right? That is the thing that comes up for a lot of people, but it is our responsibility as adults to take care of all of the kids in our community, and that means if we see something, we're saying something. And whether that is noticing to that parent, if that feels appropriate, that, hey, it looks like your kid's behavior is changing a bit. They're not as outgoing as they once were. They're having a lot of trouble connecting with other kids, right? They used to come over to our house all the time and play, and now they're really just super reserved and seem pretty scared. Or if it's maybe calling that 1-800 number for the child abuse hotline, right? And their job, our job as general community members, is to notice and to do something, whether that's talking with the parent, making that report to CPS. And CPS's job is to then decide, you know, okay, so are we going to investigate? What is the level of investigation that is needed? And so everyone plays a role in keeping kids safe.
So CPS is Child Protective Services for those out there.
I like that phrase. If you see something, say something. I know that's used across the horizon for all kinds of possible crisis events, whether it be potential terrorism or even in a kind of a, maybe it's not minor, but a minor way, always driving down the road, you may see someone you think might need help. Well, you have to make a decision. Do you help them, or is it maybe not what you think it is? So there's always kind of back and forth to do the right thing, but not be unsafe. But in general, if you see something in this area, it's better to say I'd be conservative, if you will, and say I'd rather be wrong in my perceptions than maybe someone be suffering the effect of a crisis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and calling our number and consulting with a counselor advocate is always a great idea too.
Yeah.
And then the counselor advocate can walk them through the steps of here's the number to call. I think you guys have also done three-way calls with people to help them through that process. So that's always an option.
And that's what I was just going to ask. Perhaps you're a neighbor, a friend, a family member, and you see something, but you're just not sure about it. And that person could call you guys and say, could you help me out? I don't want to be wrong or mess anything up, but I'm really wondering and concerned. And you guys would help them talk through that and give them specific markers and help on how to proceed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know it's maybe even too common and more common than I would hope it would be now, that a lot of people go, oh, people in social, psychological areas, they're always trying to alert you to too many things. Kids go through a lot. People go through a lot. And why worry about it? What are the long-term effects of not doing something?
Yeah, we know that when kids get in and get help, or adults, right, when people have support directly following a crisis, we're able to help mitigate those ongoing trauma symptoms. So things like potential post-traumatic stress disorder from an event, or even things like just, right, that hypervigilance of like looking over their shoulder all the time, wondering what is going to happen next. And these kind of more psychological symptoms can have a real impact on our physical body as well, right? Because you're always in this heightened state of alert, and our bodies aren't meant to be in that state of alert all the time. And so it can impact things like your stress hormone levels, can make people get sick easier, things like that. And so there's not only these long-term psychological effects, but also physical effects from not intervening and providing support directly following a traumatic event.
In discussing the topic of PTSD or long-term effects from abuse, one story comes to mind, and we've had this on the show before, but it's so pertinent. A person in the military had PTSD so badly, he would have nightmares. And they were so strenuous and severe that that would release the bad chemicals.
Cortisol and others, yeah.
And these chemicals have the power to affect your heart, your neurological makeup. And the doctors were telling him that it could really lead to severe illness and even death if he didn't get a handle somehow on these toxic dreams. And it was interesting, the military understood and got a service dog for him.
The VA, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That it was trained to notice when he had the eye blinking, eye fluttering reflex that happens with bad dreams called the psychopalpebral reflex. The dog would alert him and wake him up and actually slept with him and took care of this situation and managed to turn the tide. So therapy animals are something that might be very valuable with children and adults who've had great difficulties.
Yeah, we know that therapy animals can be really invaluable to people. We have been coordinating with a facility dog. So that is a dog who was initially an individual service dog and now comes in to just support a wide variety of people. Most often he'll come in and just sit with kids before and after that forensic interview and provide that kind of co-regulation and support in that way. But there's also lovely programs like Canine Companions that are available to help get folks connected with service animals. Also service horses, right? I know there is a place in Three Forks that is doing service miniature horses. So that is also a wonderful program to look into for folks.
And really the research is profound about how helpful just holding and petting an animal can be. Reduces blood pressure, increases endorphins, the good chemicals that make us feel good. So that's something we could, I think, keep in mind and consider. And we don't want to forget that the Help Center provides all of these services, magnificent help and services. And what can we in the community, how can we support the Help Center? So just any way that you want to do a fundraiser, it could be a garage sale, a kid's lemonade stand.
Write a check.
Just go give cash, any of those. And then I wanted you to tell us also, downtown there's a wonderful way at the Saks thrift store right downtown Bozeman. Tell us where that is and what that does.
Yeah, so Saks Thrift is on Mendenhall Street, downtown Bozeman. And you can donate or use goods there, shop there, and be able to support our program. So the profits from that organization then goes and supports our direct service programs. And then Saks also provides vouchers to people who need basic items such as bedding, shoes, clothing, silverware, forks, those sorts of things. So that's a great way to support us. Of course, people can donate to us directly. We always need volunteers as well. So Saks Thrift accepts volunteers. We need help on our crisis lines. So giving of time is super important to us as well.
And really, which household in Bozeman doesn't have stuff that gets cluttered up and piled up that we want to give to someone else or sell to someone else, but why don't we just save all of that and carry it downtown to Saks and really help devote some funding for the Help Center for all of this wonderful work they're doing. And so right downtown, guys, that's where it is. And along the more serious lines, we were discussing that even at MSU recently, they were talking about that there was increased drugging at parties of women's drinks, and that every young woman or woman of any age, when drinking alcoholic beverages, needs to just hold her drink all the time, just turning away for a minute or two, give someone all they need to put a little pill in there, and that's how a lot of sexual assaults happen these days. And they were talking about such a problem on campus. They cut down on all parties over the weekend while they all addressed this situation. So it's something that even right here in Bozeman we need to really take note of.
Is that something that you see often in the sexual assault?
Yeah, I think there is often, right, we know that people know each other most often when these things are happening, and sometimes that is this acquaintance at a party, and that the use of drugs and alcohol lowers people's inhibitions, and so maybe we're not as alert, or maybe that's just like this boundary crossing has happened more and more frequently. And we do know that that is used quite often in sexual assaults, is let me get you a lot of alcohol, right? The mixing of alcohol and drugs, stuff like that, that really can cause a pretty significant problem, right? And then sometimes we might not remember exactly what happened, but there is always support for that too, right? So anyone who has these gaps in memories and is feeling like maybe something happened, maybe something didn't, can always go to the ER, and we have support through our local law enforcement to do things like toxicology screenings, or you can call the hotline and get anonymous support to just kind of talk through. Let's talk through what you remember. Let's talk through the risk factors.
Exactly. I was reading that a little pill is dropped into a drink and it disappears immediately. But following that, the woman who drinks that has no recollection or no understanding of what's going on. So like you said, they come to you and they don't really know, except that they know they've been violated. So this is something that we all need to train our young women, and I suppose young men, about. In speaking about young men, do you think that it's possible in our society that we somehow lend the feeling that entitlement, power, and control should belong to the young man, all the macho stuff and the lack of boundaries, would that be possibly the reason that one out of four young women have been, at least partially part of the reason they've been assaulted?
Yeah, I think, right, assault really encompasses this big boundary crossing, and in a lot of ways we have made a lot of strides as a society to step away from that. Boys don't cry, be a man, men take what they want stereotype, and in a lot of ways we're still working on that. And so like as a mom myself to three young boys, right, it's really doing that work super early of working on boundaries with them. And what that looks like is, hey, mom just needs 5 minutes to myself right now. And even if that makes them upset, right, you hold space for that feeling of, yeah, you're pretty upset by that, and that's okay. You're allowed to feel upset, and I still get to have this space for my body, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're slowly kind of starting to teach boys and men what that
that looks like. And that really starts with those, that really solid boundary work that everyone gets. And also, right, we also teach our girls and women in our lives that, like, you get to hold a boundary and that's okay. And you're not responsible for making someone upset or the way they feel because you are holding that boundary.
And if we really look at it closely, Superman couldn't have been more polite, more kind, more respectful. And so maybe we need to create more models like that.
Yeah, and I think you, right, we do see a lot of that. I obviously am very focused on young kids because I have mostly young kids and work primarily with our adolescent population. But all of the books we see coming out now that really support boys, you know, learning how to express their emotions in a way that is healthy, and all kids learning to express those emotions, and how to go about having big feelings and how to interact with other people in the world, I think is really uplifting and really lends to what we're doing as a society to kind of change these statistics.
Yes, we really need to do that.
I know many in our society right now get misinformation about it. I think the word woke, that if a man especially believes in that kind of thing to be actually have a feminine side, to expect boundaries, to not be impulsive, to not always have to be macho. So I would say to you guys listening, it's okay to be woke in that respect if you don't want to be in others.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're right. Human beings have a wide spectrum of the things that we like to engage in. And no matter what, right, if you like to go out and hike and shoot guns and whatever, you can still have the space to respect boundaries. And that doesn't make you less of a human being or less of a man, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, the gentlest approaches to people are typically kindness and respect, and I think just the way we treat others might have an impact on our children. So maybe it doesn't take all this overt teaching, just being an example of kindness, perhaps.
Yeah, kids are constantly watching us. They are so perceptive and so good at seeing what's going on around them. And I'm sure any parent listening knows, right, the moment that you drop something and get super frustrated, that is the thing that you feel like your kid picks up on. But they are also watching us be kind to people, be kind to animals, stop and pick up trash on the side of the road, right? Like, do all these little things that are kind to others and kind to our world, and they're also learning and picking up on that from you.
And also modeling consent, too, mm-hmm. I think is a big thing of, even as you're like being playful with your kid and they tell you to stop, being respectful of that. It's just like little things about making sure they know that they have control of their body.
Yeah, so things like tickling, right? Little kids getting, doing roughhousing, being tickled, but as soon as they say stop, it's hands off, okay. And even acknowledging that out loud, right? That, yeah, you used your words and told me to stop, I'm gonna stop. Let me know if you wanna start playing again. Or let me know if you want to play in a different way.
That's so wise. that just seems like it should be knowledge commonly, but it's not. It's something we need to consciously add into our child rearing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And then our children learn how to rear their children from us. So what we do will set the stage maybe for generations to come.
You know, you had mentioned a different model of how sex assault is considered and dealt with. Can you give a contrast of how it used to be and how it is now?
Yeah, I think we have made a lot of progress, especially in our community. That is really what I can talk to because that is where the work I have done has been. In the way that our systems respond to sexual assault, in the way that people believe survivors, right? There is this kind of has been a shift, right, towards acknowledging that sexual assault is something that happens, having more knowledge around the actual facts, right? So we've shifted from it's a stranger in the bushes to it's probably going to be someone you know. And then having more open and honest conversations about that and what that looks like.
Absolutely. We want to highlight that April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month because 1 out of 4 women and 1 out of 6 men, and these are only the reported cases, but this is the difficulty that we're all trying to deal with and to improve on. So along those lines, if you could go back over with us, ladies, exactly where you're located, how one would go there, and give us all of the connecting points here.
Yeah, so there's a couple of different ways folks can get connected with our program. Probably the most typical for when we interact with people under 18 is that that is coming in as a referral from either local law enforcement or CPS, who says, hey, this kid really needs some specialized services and needs to have the wraparound support of all of our community members and teams here. And so we'll do things like forensic interviews, getting connected with the parents and providing them resources, doing counseling services for kids or parents. And then for folks who are over 18, generally we see that coming in either through the hospital, someone going to seek immediate care following a sexual assault. And we partner with the hospital and get called in immediately as soon as someone presents. And so we will have a counselor advocate show up there and provide support throughout the entirety of that hospital process, or having someone call in on our hotline, which is going to be 406-586-3333. And just kind of letting us know that they had experienced sexual assault and are hoping to get connected with someone. And that can be someone who has experienced sexual abuse as a child and is now an adult, or someone who's had a really recent experience, or anywhere in between. We provide support and services free of charge to anyone who has experienced sexual violence.
And we have a counselor advocate who is on call 24/7, so no matter the time of day, they can get connected to services.
That's just excellent. And what if somebody were to go there? Your doors are open. What times of the day, and where are you physically located, please?
Yeah, so we are open traditional business hours, 8 to 5, for in-person. So we're at 699 Farmhouse Lane on the east side of Bozeman. But the easiest way to get connected immediately is calling our 24-hour number. And then if the person needs to be seen in person, then we can coordinate that with them directly. That's the best way to connect with us.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What would you advise young women out there as we get toward the end of the program? Just give us an overview of what you would say to young women and to mothers of young children.
Yeah, I think really, we know the best preventative thing, at least for kids right now, is having a safe adult that they know they can turn to with questions. It's like we talked about, right? Kids are really perceptive, and they usually can tell when something feels off. And so having an adult who they know I can go to with hard questions is really valuable for them. And then if you are that adult, right, you believe. You say things like, thank you for telling me. I'm going to make sure I get you the help you need, right? I'm going to make sure we take care of this. And for adults and for older kids, right, just still making sure that you have people that you can talk to, making sure that you really know what your boundaries are and how you notice when your boundaries have been crossed, right? Because it's not always super overt. And so Is it the little things like someone getting way too close to you and it's making you uncomfortable and maybe you've asked them to step back, but it keeps happening? And so noticing when things like that are happening, and just building in that support network for yourself, right? Having those friends, having people that even as adults, we have questions of, did this really happen the way I think it did? And so having people you can bounce that off of, and that can be a friend or that can be a counselor advocate.
And I would say that if anyone comes to you and confides in you that something has happened to them recently or in the past, know that you don't have to handle that situation alone. That is why we have 24/7 support. No matter where you live in the country, there's support someplace in your area. And so keep that in mind that you don't have to navigate that situation on your own.
Well, I just have to be contacted through 988. Is that correct? Anywhere in the country?
Yeah, they could call 988 or find their local or regional sexual assault support center. There is a national number, and the number is not coming to me off the top of my head.
Yeah, I don't have that number right in front of me, but happy to get it to you guys so we can add it in at some point. But yes, there is a national number, and usually what they'll do then is connect that person to somewhere local. But for our local community, right, you can call 988, you can call 211, or you can call our local number, and any of those numbers will work to get you connected with sexual assault specific support.
Mm-hmm. And I'd just like to mention that, yes, there's a problem and it appears to be massive, but the good word here is that you can get beyond these events and you can deal with them in a constructive, positive way and put them behind you. And you can help others to do this. You can volunteer at the Help Center, and maybe your experience will be able to inform others and help them. So there's a lot of hope also in these terrible numbers, but let's all work like the Help Center is to bring these numbers back into good territory.
Yeah, I think that's really perfectly said, right? We can't do this on our own. It takes a community to change the way that we respond to sexual violence and child abuse.
We'd like to thank you very much for this presentation, and this will be on KGVM 95.9. during this month, Assault Awareness Month, and Help Center can call 988-211, 406-586-3333. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and we'll see you in the Health and Happiness Show next time. Thank you.